Good evening, everybody. We're doing our third shiur on Shiur Shirim. And as we go on, we will find that this sefer, it gets even more incredible than it has been till now. Something I didn't mention the last couple of weeks, we spoke about the order of the books that Shlomo wrote. So he says he wrote Shiur Shirim when he was young, and then Mishlei, middle age, crisis, and then Kohelet at the end. There's another opinion there in that in Midrash Shiur Shirim, which says the opposite, that he actually started off with Kohelet, which doesn't really fit into the context. The reason why they say that is because they want Shiur Shirim to be his last sefer, because it's talking about such high connection to God, Avat Hashem, which is the end of the Rambam Hilchot Tshuva. You go to the love of God, which is like the end of Maseilat Shearim. You know, you're right up at the top. So they couldn't come to terms with Shlomo writing that in his youth. They thought he must have written it when he was at a much older stage of his 52 years. You know, I'm not convinced. I really feel the other way around makes much more sense. Particularly Kohelet is when he looks back on so much of his life and comments on it. And Shiur Shirim is this youthful, presentation, which is obviously, you know, when he's much younger. I mean, it just fits so much better into the whole description. The other interesting thing, which Professor Cohen, this a safe which I just wanted to show you, Gavriel Chaim Cohen, is the book that we're actually going to quote from here, Studies in the Five Megillot. It came out in 2006. I've actually had shiurim from him. He's a very interesting professor at Hebrew U. And he's done a book called Iyunim B'Chamesh Megillot. And he goes through the five Megillot. It's a beautiful sefer. It's got also each Megillah introduced with a beautiful a page of something from describing the events of the Megillah. I mean, it's a magnificent sefer. And again, very traditional. He's not bringing anything here which I think would upset the traditionalist, but on the other hand, he's prepared to be a bit more inventive when it comes to certain things. And what we'll see on the page in front of you, we're going to look at page 2. Last week we saw the introduction of Rav Gifter, and we saw Rav Gifter's way of dealing with the physicality of Shiur Shirim, and explained to us that through the guf you get to the neshama. And again, does Rav Gifter see any intrinsic value in the mashal? Or is he just saying that the main focus should be the Nimshal? Certainly the art school people who took Rav Gifter's introduction see it much more in terms of the Nimshal, right? And, to the point where if you have it in the Siddur, it starts already with the translation of the first Pasuk is already the Nimshal, talking about the love between God and the Jewish people. But what is fascinating is what Gavriel Cohen says here. And we're going to just pick up on a number of points that he brings. And one of them is in terms of that Shiur Shirim contains so much more than just this very beautiful collection of songs, of expressing the love between these two people in the story, which is expressing the love of God. He says one of the real byproducts, or maybe even main product, is the fact that Shiur Shirim is so replete with descriptions of Eretz Yisrael. You know, if you didn't have the theme of the love between God and the Jewish people, then you'd have to say that what Shlomo HaMelech is trying to engender is a love between Am Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael. Right? And he says this, if you're with me on page 2, I'll just show you where it is. It's number 1. And it's section D on page 2 of the handout that I gave you. Beauty of Eretz Yisrael. Just listen to this. Rabim in adimuyim shebehem mishtamesh amegila letiyo yofya shoreya lukuchim itiyo yofya shel Eretz Yisrael. The fact is that so much of the description of the beauty of this of the young woman is taken. All of the descriptions, many of them, are taken from bigger descriptions in terms of the beauty of Eretz Yisrael. He says, Omnam Dava Zehu TV. He says this is something natural. In the end of the day, this is true for every poet, if you want to put it like that. He will use what he sees around him in terms of describing something on a deeper level. So Shlomo HaMelech looked in and around Eretz Yisrael, and he saw so many beautiful things in different places, as one sees today. If you do any of these tours, you see all these incredible natural resources that exist in Israel, from the snow in the north to the heat in the south. It's a remarkable country in so many ways. And Shlomo HaMelech took a lot of those beautiful descriptions and used them in terms of the connection between God and the Jewish people. The one that's my favorite, which, we all know the Pasuk, but it's such a beautiful Pasuk. I think it's in chapter 2, where he talks about the Nitzanim. If I'm not mistaken, although it's always difficult to find the Pasuk when you're looking for it, where he talks about the blossom has come through. It's chapter 2, verse 13. Chanta pagel, right? That the fig tree has already produced its early figs. Vagfanim smadar nadnu, and the vines have produced smadar, which is the early grapes. Reach has produced that fantastic smell. Kumi lechi rayati. He says, "Arise, go, my beloved, Yafati Lechila, come away with me, Yonati." And then he describes the dove, right? And he uses the word Yonas so much. Sorry, I'm looking at the previous pasuk, verse 12. Hanitzanim niru ba'aretz. This fantastic pasuk, which you hear at the springtime. There's a lot of people who, on the radio, you hear this pasuk when they sort of talking about the weather. They say that nitzanim, the blossoms. This is chapter 2, verse 12. The blossoms are in the land. Eit hazamir higia. The time of singing has arrived. The birds are chirping. Kol hator nishma be'atzenu, and you can hear the sound of the turtle doves. And it really is true. You know, there are certain things which he's referring to here, certain specific descriptions in Eretz Yisrael, which are absolutely to this very day. He talks about En Gedi, and he talks about different places in Eretz Yisrael. You know, there's a very special connection that Shlomo HaMelech has, or certainly tries to develop here, in the language, in the imagery of Eretz Yisrael. And just back to that particular paragraph, which we were reading at the third line, Baram, he says, however, of Yam shall tiurim ela notain the itim krovot et atchusha. Good evening. It says that at certain times you get the sense, you get the feeling from these descriptions. Shaloed yofya shalareya milvad ba hadod l'shabeh. He's not just praising the beauty of the girl. Right, the king here is not just praising her beauty. Elagamet yofya shel Eretz Yisrael. He really is praising the beauty of Eretz Yisrael. Right, he wants to establish to everybody how beautiful Eretz Yisrael is. Be'ekshezer yesh liskoet iskura minim sh'aretz nishtabcha behem, and he mentions, for instance, the species by which Eretz Yisrael is praised. Ve'eta iskua chozeh shel habitui zavat chalav u'dvash. And there is a reference over and over again to the land of milk and honey. Chalav, actually, according to some information, doesn't mean milk. It means white wine, which is very interesting. There is a perish, chalav, udavash, white wine and honey, which makes a lot more sense than milk. I know that tenuva is wonderful these days, and you get all the cheeses and everything from Israel, but originally it wasn't about milk, it wasn't about cheese, it was about white wine. Which, again, is another explanation. So again, what Gabi Cohen here, Professor Cohen, is trying to establish here is that the language, the imagery of Shir HaShirim is not just in terms of the love between these two players of the story, but it's much bigger than that. It's expressing this tremendous love towards Eretz Yisrael. And then he says something also very interesting. And number 2 is section D on page 2. Tiurei Areya Heim Leitim Kol Mafligim. He says the description of the beauty of this woman is so extreme. Ad she'enei mishartim odet amatara mugbelet. Ela matzbiim leiva yofya shereya she'enena basav adam. It's almost as if you're describing something which is so magnificent it can't be human. And of course that blends so beautifully into the connection between the nimsha, the mashal and the nimsha, which we said of the connection between God and the Jewish people. When you're describing this beauty, it's so extreme, the descriptions, the all the different parts of the body are given fantastic description. He goes on. If you look at other songs which have been preserved from that period, other poems, Haflagot Elahem Yichudiyot, these extremes are very unique to Shir HaShirim. Even when he's just describing her stomach, what does he say? Bitnecha aramat chitim. Your stomach is like a pile of grain, he says. Suga b'shoshanim, surrounded by roses. Whoa, that's like sort of an amazing description in itself. V'alodot apa, when he's talking about her nose, he says, apacha k'migdala lavonon, your nose is like the Tower of Lebanon. Wow. Tsofer p'nei Damasek, which looks towards Damascus. I mean, this is so out of control almost. And again, what Professor Cohen here, Gabby Cohen, is saying is that there is this extreme element of description because this lends itself to what the Sefer is really doing, which is obviously describing this fantastic relationship between God and the Jewish people. And the third thing which he says, which I think is also very fascinating, Haraya ina ro'et atzma tamid kichida bilvan. Actually, I didn't want to go through three. I wanted to do four. Excuse me. He says, "Mechane mashuta nosaf l'shira megillah hi ha'oz shebo mitgagat arayel doda belish in the yedim lepigishot shemamash." It's what's happening in Shir HaShirim is that there is this sense of connection between the girl and the lover, the two lovers here, to the point where we are witnesses, or rather when we can state quite clearly that we never actually witness them coming together. We never witness in any of the descriptions, in any of the interactions, that they've actually in the same room together. They're just pining from each other from a distance. Which again, he said, is very fascinating. If you just turn over to page 3, and I'll just show you where he goes with this, because this is very interesting. He says like this, on the fourth line, he says, where I've underlined, "Umavatim et hashifa lishleimut." What is being expressed here is the fact that there is a desire for completeness, for shleimut, for completion. In other words, from a distance, you want to bring things together. But he says, and this is the point that I wanted to share with you, "V'olam hagisha legorit anukuta ben shei chazal." Perushim shel Rashi ben Ezra kiyotze bo notele min ha-migilah midah rabah shechaya pnimim shel chiyunut atzmit. What Professor Cohen is saying, essentially what we've been saying the whole way through, he's suggesting that in Megillah Shir HaShirim, what we have is, in essence, sort of two levels of the Megillah. The obviously the love between God and the Jewish people, which is really where we started off 2 weeks ago, and we spoke about what our scroll does with that. But also he says there is within the actual story a tremendous sense of vitality. And he says the more that we go to the Nimshal, sometimes we drag away more of the vitality from the story than we than we should be allowed to. He says that even commentaries like Rashi and Ibn Ezra, who heavily bring you into the nimsha, into what it's referring to in terms of God and the Jewish people, by the way they do that, you lose some of the essence of the actual mashal. And I want to go to the next paragraph and I'll show you what he says. We're going to see here that he is very interesting in terms of the way he describes the Megillah. He says, we've used the language till now, mashal and nimsha. Mashal is a story, mashal is the allegory, and the nimshal is the message, right? What it means. He says something slightly different here. Good evening. He says that what we're actually talking about here is not really a mashal. He says what we're talking about, he uses the Hebrew word semel. Samach mem lamed. Semel, samach mem lamed, I've tried to translate to English as best I can. I think what it means is usually translated as symbol. Right? Semel. It's a semel. It's a symbol of something. What he's going to say is that because the story in itself has so much beauty within it. The actual story of the connection between these two people, he says that becomes in itself a symbol. Not just the what it refers to in terms of God and the Jewish people, but in itself, there is such beauty in what we're reading here that it's symbolic. In other words, it has its own life, it has its own situation which we have to respect. It's not, as we've been saying maybe till now, certainly in terms of Art Scroll, their presentation, that it's all about the Nimshal. He says no, that the Mashal itself is so important, because as we've said and we explained last week with Rav Gifter's introduction there, that through the physicality we come to an awareness of the spirituality, but the physicality is very important. The essence of the Megillah, the connection between these two people, is so important that we need it in order to arrive at the higher level which we're supposed to arrive at. And I'll show you the way he puts this, because this is very, very interesting. Who is he basing himself on? There was a commentary of it must have been from Germany, a Rav Yosef Kalibach. Yosef Kalibach, he says, Hashem Yimkom Damo, so I'm assuming Rabbi Kalibach was killed in the war. That's my assumption. He wrote this commentary on Shir HaShirim in the 1930s. I would guess that he was probably a relative of Shlomo Kalibach. That would be my guess, but I don't know. I haven't looked up Yosef Kalibach directly. I think I've seen this Sefer, the Sefer that he quotes from Joseph Kalibach. And he also says that not only does the Nimshal, not only does the message have such an importance, but the Mashal, what he's calling here the Semel, the symbol itself, of what is being presented here is also extremely important and must never be ignored. And as we said already, you know, over and over again, this is a reaction, obviously, to so much negative reaction to the actual content of the story. Oscar tried to be very, how should we say, politically correct by almost ignoring the content of the story. And we do so at our peril. We've said now for a number of weeks that, in fact, by ignoring the actual language of the story and what is being said here, we are missing the essence of how to go from A to B to C. How do we go to the Madrega of Avas Hashem? We've got to start off in the physical world. And if we don't start off in the physical world, we're never going to get to this spiritual high. Right? And that's essentially what we're saying here. But listen to the way he puts it. It's very beautiful. I'm going to share this with you a little bit, and then as I said at the end, we'll have a look a little bit at some of the psukim. This is on page 3, and it is 1-2, the third paragraph down. Yitera mizu, he says, more than what I've said now. He says something very strange. In Tanakh, we rarely find that a book is completely a story without giving us the message. You're right, it just doesn't happen like that. And he gives an example. There are certain psukim, or certain books which you mention above, in other words, he says here, it's so strange, he's referring to the book of Hosea. Hosea describes a whole relationship between a husband and a wife, and the wife is strayed from the husband, and the whole language that is used over there is obviously a metaphor for the relationship between God and the Jewish people, which became very strained during the period of the First Temple. And the book of Hosea spells it out for you. Right? He doesn't leave you in the dark about what the message is. He gives you the story, and then he gives you the message as well. Shir HaShirim doesn't do that. Shir HaShirim leaves you with the story, right? And you've got to work it out. So he says that's something which is very unique. And he goes on, listen to this. Yesh lizkor, we should remember, shebemikra malaveh mashal b'derek klal pianuch nimshalu. In other words, it's usually the story is given, the message goes with the story. Kach l'mashal, mashal ha-kerem, if you know the story there from Yeshayo, there's a whole story about a vineyard, which I didn't go into. Chazon ha-tzamot yivesho, but that's the one everybody knows, the dry bones. And explains to you what is the image of the dry bones. And of course it became very powerful after the Second World War. Right? That the rising from the ashes, the bones were rising again. And the imagery there was extremely meaningful, and certainly was an impetus for so many people in terms of what happened between 1945 and 48. And he says all of those images here are explained within the book in which they appear. So why does this story over here have this kind of disconnect between obviously what we understand it to mean, the relationship between God and the Jewish people, that's not spelled out in the Sefer so clearly. So he says in the next paragraph, and I just want to show you this because it's a difficult point, but I think it's in essence what we've been saying all the way along. Mishum kach, it's just over halfway down. Domesh ein lirot b'megilat she'ashirim, mashal yachasim ben HaKadosh Baruch Hu l'Yisrael. So we should not just look at Shir HaShirim as an allegory of the relationship between God and the Jewish people. Ela semel. It's a symbol. What does that mean? B'semel b'nigud l'mashal. What's the difference between a symbol and a mashal and an allegory? In a symbol, yesh mamashut, there is substance, gam l'tiyur atzmo, to the description itself. Ach, ein hu mabateet ha'ne'emar bo bilvan. It's not just explaining or expressing what it is saying. Elohu gam romez, but it's also a hint, l'mishor, to another level, shema'evalo, which is deeper or higher, l'fi'anachazo, shirashim achem mevateet otzmat ava bein adod l'raya. So in essence, what is going on in shirashim is this incredible love between the dod, between the king, or whoever he is, and the shepherdess, the young girl. V'rag b'zechut kiyuma shel zo, and because this exists, this intense love between these two people, mesugal adam lavin, that's why you can become able to understand it, omek hakesha, the deep connection bein HaKadosh Baruch Hu l'amo, exactly what we said, the connection between God and the Jewish people. And he goes on about Hoshea at the bottom, which we mentioned. I just want to read to you the paragraph over here in section F, which is taken from this Rabbi Yosef Kalaba. I have to do a bit of research about him. But it's a paragraph which you'll see it's indented over here. I've written next to Rav J. Kalabach Zah. And it goes like this. It's these couple of lines over here, which are indented in smaller print. Mechosech hashivut hu be'etzem im kavanata shel megilat Shir HaShirim lezug ne'avim amiti. Shlomo v'Shulamit. For instance, he says, "What maybe? If you just say that it's a love story between Shlomo and Shulamit, that in itself is not enough. Ah, im kavanata lezug ideali. But if it's for an ideal couple, he mitkavenet lefachot lishneim. It certainly is referring to these two people in its essence." Of palm lolach rom bavan, not just to one more than the other. In other words, what he's saying is, we always talk about the love between God and the Jewish people, but there has to be something within the description itself. Umikan sheparshanim baalei samchut, and that's why there are commentaries who are of authority. Ma'amidim ze muzet shtei hatefisot b'shivayon. The two ways of understanding this as, in essence, a symbolic representation of this incredible love between these two people is valuable in itself, as well as what it represents, which is the love between God and the Jewish people. And he explains, Professor Cohen here, Gabi Cohen explains, Perusho, in his commentary, Ein Kalabach Mefaresh Kol Prat Lefi Nimshalo. He doesn't explain every detail according to the Nimsha, as the art scroll does from verse 1. He's already giving you the Nimsha without explaining anything about what's going on in the actual story. Elohu Mistapek. What is Kalabach saying? He's sort of satisfied here. Beherot Klaliot. He's making some general comments. Hamirot HaKetuvim Lo Yichud HaYachasim El Hashem. In the end of the day, of course, it's about our relationship to God and God and His people. Achu marchivet adibur. But he increases the whole discussion here. Al etzem hadimui, about the actual comparison, she yachasei Hashem li'amo, between that God and the relationship between God and the Jewish people, v'yachasei adod l'rayato, and the relationship between these two lovers. And he says, ze kocha, this is quoting Kalbach, and we'll just finish this point and then we'll move on. Ze kocha shel ahava, shehi ma'atzila kol davar nichnas l'reshuta umarom mamto. The power of the middle here of ahava, and certainly in terms of love of God, it takes something and raises it up. And then the battle, as it were, between the body and the soul has been taken away. Between the spiritual world and the physical world. And then, of course, we understand that the reference here is between the love between God and the Jewish people. Then any physical element loses its heaviness, as it were, or the spiritual element is not so heavy. Basically, what we're saying is we can take every element of the physical world and elevate it to serve God. And that again fits into our philosophy of Shlomo HaMelech, which we mentioned a number of times. Itaruta dilatata, he takes from this world and elevates it up to a higher level. It's breathtaking. And what's basically going on here is very much of what we've been saying, that to ignore the mashal, to ignore the story, one does so. I suppose he could answer here, and he brings the Rambam at the end, which we looked at already last week. You do so without really, almost to the point of missing what the book is about. Of course it's about the love between God and the Jewish people. How do we get there? How do we actually elevate ourselves together? And we need to go through the process of understanding the physical relationship and the descriptions. And he says not only that, but what we said at the beginning of taking the beautiful descriptions of Eretz Yisrael and using them as part of the overall effect of the Sefer, it's elevating in every aspect. And he's answered his question, why does it not give us the Nimshal in the story? Because the Mashal in itself is so precious, it's so important. He says it's not Mashal, it's really Semel. It's really a symbol in its own right. And I think this is just something which I wanted to share with you. He quotes it, of course, from Rav Kook, who also saw it in those terms. Doesn't surprise me. Rav Kook was on that wavelength the whole time. No question in my mind about that. And again, at the end, if you have this piece and you want to look at a bit more, on the last page, he does talk about other commentaries. I wrote it here in section F, other parshanim. He quotes you Barbanel and Malbim. Malbim talks about in fact, it's not the love between God and the Jewish people, but it's the love between the Shema. He sees it Nefesh and Elohim, the love between the soul and God. So it's not even, according to the Malbim, it's not about Am Yisrael and God. It's about the Neshama trying to strive towards God. Whichever way you understand that. A lot of people are very uncomfortable with the Malbim's approach because it's not quite within the literal meaning of what everybody else, the way people understand it. But, there are different focuses here, different ways of presenting this material. I want to leave it at that point in terms of our Hakadama. Because, if we're going to sort of do a little bit of Shir Shirim, we might as well learn a bit of the Sefer. Okay, and this is where things get really quite difficult. We'll look at the first couple of psukim, and I just want to share with you one of the, I don't know how to describe it. When we talk about the Vilna Gaon, we talk about someone who, again, I don't even know where to begin, how one describes such a gentleman. I would present it is like this. There are people who are conforming within the framework of Parshanut. Then there are people who are a bit out of the box, like the Ibn Ezra, like the Balaturim, and then there's the Vilna Gaon. All right, he's so out there and sees connections and sees beautiful connections that, things which we would never dream of, we would never think of. And there is a classic piece of Vilna Gaon on the first part of Shir HaShirim. So what we're going to do, I'm just going to read through the first four psukim, right, as much as we can try to translate it. If you want to try and understand it, that's already a bit more challenging. And then we'll see what the Vilna Gaon does with that. And I want to show you this because it is quite remarkable. If you got it, the page in front of you of the Sefer, Shir HaShirim Asher LiShlomo, right? The Song of Songs, which is Solomon. So we said this is a suggestion that Shlomo certainly put it together, right? Not necessarily according to the Gemara, Baba Basra, he didn't write it, right? The Gemara there says that Chizkiyo wrote it down, but Shlomo presumably passed it down as a verbal tradition until eventually it was written down. Gabi Cohen, Professor Cohen here brings another commentary, which he says Asher is really can be taken as not Asher, but he says the Aleph should can be taken as a Shin. Sheshar Lishlomo. He says that what happened is that this Shir Hashirim was sung to Shlomo. It may not have been Shlomo who actually put it together, as the Gemara says, with Chizkiyot. So he's suggesting that what the first pasuk is saying is that it was sung to Shlomo as part of the praises of the king and the sort of part of court life. Sheshar, they had a person who was engaged, who was part of the court of Shlomo, whose job was to make up these love songs. Okay, that's one suggestion, but I think that's a bit remote. Let's put it that way. But we'll go on. Look at the psukim. And as I said, we're just going to look at the first four psukim. Yishokeni minashikot piyu. All right, let it, and again, I'll just translate it here from the English translation. Yishokeni, let him kiss me from the kisses of his mouth. Ki tovim dodecha miyayin, for your love is better than wine. And we'll see in a minute what the Vilna Gaon does with this. Right, this is very extreme. Yeah. Yeah.
Which they say, you said he wrote when he was younger. Did he become more sophisticated?
Mishle clearly reflects a more, how are we going to put it, more mature approach, if that's the word to use. All right, where he's sort of looking at the dilemmas in life and trying to sort of give some guidance or whatever. Again, the commentary to look at Mishle is, again, the Vilna Gaon, who analyzes, and of course it's in the language, it's in the different uses of the terminology that in Mishle is very significant. The Mishle that we all know is Eshet Chayil at the end, chapter 31, right, which we know from Mishle. And I think by the end, certainly Kohelet, things are much more, downbeat. He's looking at the world and being very direct about how vain most of the things that he spent his life trying to elevate, became very vain. Mishle, to me, fits in beautifully with the story in Malachim at the end, where he loses perspective completely. According to the Gemara, he really loses perspective. All right, he starts going up to Shemaim and he starts having fights in heaven, because with his knowledge he wants to conquer the heavens as well as conquer the earth, and he loses out with the king of the demons. There's a famous Gemara about that, right? So it's all very, very mysterious what happens to Shlomo in the end. And I think that is Kohelet. But his final word in Kohelet, that fear God, okay, because he sees in the end of the day, that's really the bottom line. Right,
maybe,
right.
Maybe I had to be more emphatic what I was saying my next two sparks, so people at least come away with something as opposed to too many questions.
Right, because there's so many questions. And in fact, there is this very outrageous suggestion that he wrote it, he got married at 15, and who was Bat Paro, this love of his life, the one that he was so connected to more than all the rest of them. And he may have just written this as a dalliance for Bat Paro, right? And take away all of the high and mighty stuff, and it really became his present, his wedding present to Bat Paro, which is a very outrageous suggestion, but may not be so far from the truth. I really don't know. Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. I don't know. The Gemara has a tradition. There's Torah Shebaal Peh. I don't know. There may be other reasons, because Gemara goes to all the different authors of different books, and it gives a whole bunch of them. Maybe thematically it goes together with Chizkiyahu. I don't know. That's a great question, and we have to look in the Gemara then. Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff there from, and it doesn't say just Chizkiyahu, it says Chizkiyahu v'siyato. Siyato means that he had a group of scholars working on this. So it's interesting that Chizkiyahu, at his point in history, put it down in writing. We spoke about this in the first week, and we said, there's this comparison between Torah Shebaal Peh, which eventually had to be written down. It's got that kind of element within it. But to say more than that, no, I haven't said. And I don't, it's something to look into. It's an interesting thing. I don't know. But that's a whole Gemara then. Boba Basra, is famous page 14 or whatever it was, 15, I don't remember now. All right, listen to this. We're just going through the Psukim. And I explained this pasuk a few weeks ago from the Balatanya. We said Yishakeni is obviously a reference to the kiss of God, which maybe is a reference to Torah, which you're saying the words of God, and therefore your lips are touching, kaviyochel, the lips of God, by expressing the words of Torah, Torah Shebichtav, and Torah Shebaal Peh. That's nishikot in the plural, right? There are two kisses coming from God, because the two Torahs go together, And tovim dadechem yayin, they're better than wine. And again, the whole theme of wine here is very, very strong. As we said, both in the literal sense and, of course, in the higher sense of something which, sort of has, what does it say about yayin? Yayin yisamach levav enosh, all of the various other psukim that one can think of, what the effect of wine is and how it opens up not only physically your mind, but of course it sort of attunes you to higher things. And there's a lot of discussion. I can't begin to go through all this, but I want to show you just a little bit of the Vilna Gaon. The Pasuk Gimel Arech Shmanecha Tovim Shemin Turak Shemecha, because of the fragrance of your oils, your name is Turak. Turak means to pour out oil. I'm going to call you Turak. Turak is the idea that the oils are being poured. And he says, Alkein alomot ahivucha, and that is why the maidens love you. All right, now what is he referring to here? We'll see in a minute. And finally, Dalet, and these are only four psukim, and we'll get to the bottom line. Moshcheni acharecha narutza, draw me, moshcheni mshicha, draw me, pull me along. Acharecha, after you, narutza, we will run after you. Moshcheni singular. Narutza plural, we will run. What's happened here? What's going on? Heviani ha-melech hadarav, the king has brought me into his rooms. Nagilo v'nismech habach, we will rejoice in you. Naskira dodech miyayin, again the theme of wine. We will recall the love which was greater than wine. Meisharim ahivucha, and those who are sincere, meisharim, yisharim ahivucha, have loved you. All right, very obscure. Let me hand this out very quickly and show you a little bit of what the Vilna Gaon does with this, because it is breathtaking. Absolutely breathtaking. don't even know how to begin this. If you look at page side A, he's looking at, I'm just looking at the fourth pasuk, but obviously all the psukim, he sees this as a unit. The Vilna Gaon follows very faithfully the story, I have to say. We saw that on the first week. In his introduction, he tells you exactly what the story is about. He's not ignoring it, but obviously he's very interested, very concerned with trying to find what the story is teaching us, what it's coming to explain. And in the middle of all of this, and I can't say more than that, he throws in an answer to a question that is a very famous question. Have a look at this. It's Pasuk Dalet, page A on the right hand side, and we'll do a little bit of the paragraph, we'll move over to the other side. Where it says Teretz, Dova Acher. But I just want to show you the beginning over here. Moshcheni acharecha narutze v'yani amelech hadara. So he's talking about being drawn after the girl here is talking, right? That she's asking to be drawn after him, that she can come into his rooms. Omeret umitchanenet moshcheni oti. Initially she begs, please bring me into your room. V'az acharecha narutza, and then we will run after you. Who's the we? Because remember, it's me. Then it goes to the plural. So the Vilna Gaon explains, ani v'narotai, shehem alamot. This is the story. Then we will all go with. I have my other young girls with me, and they will come with me. All right? And he says, bishvili yorutzu gamhem, because they'll go together with me, lehanot d'chola pachot, because they can benefit from the beautiful smell that they will experience because they're in the palace, and in the room there is obviously perfumes and who knows what. And he says, "Hamashalhu." So what is the... here's the story. Kishahalamot hashvachot rotzim lirot et hamelech. So he tells you the story. Everybody wants to see the king. Oz ovedet et hamalka. So what do? You work for the queen. Kusha malka ho lechet el beit hamelech. And when the queen goes to the palace of the king, oz betulotea reotea acharel. Then the girls come with her maidservants, her ladies in waiting, or whatever. And this is famous. Muvaot la lachazik begadel. They help her carry her clothes. Ulagbiyam, or her dress, if it's got a trail or something, and they raise it up. Va'az ro'im et ha-melech. Then they can see the king. So you can see the Vilna Gaon is telling you the story. What's going on? Now, the Nimshal Muvam, what is it really referring to in terms of the Nimshal? Or what Gabi Cohen would call the Sema, what is the symbol here? That is that the higher level of the symbol, Shekain, his suggestion number one, Eitzel Yisrael Ne'emal Atid Lavo, that in fact at the beginning of Shir Hashirim, Shlomo HaMelech is giving us a Nevuah. He's not only giving us history from the past, but he's going from the past to the future. Right? And in fact, the best way to see this, if you'll allow me, is to go to the other side of the page. It's above, 1 second, it's about halfway down on the other side of the page. Davar Acher, from the end of that paragraph, from the bottom here, it's 2, 4, 6, 10, it's 12, 14, it's about 16, 17 lines up. And it's Davar Acher. He's going on this pasuk, and he's trying to explain to you what this Moshcheni is about. Listen to this. Moshcheni Peirush, Moshcheni hi ba'et lechtam bamidbar. That it's a reference to when the Jews were traveling in the desert. Kamoshe ne'emar, as he brings the pasuk, we know it, lechtech acharai bamidbar. You went after me in the desert. That was Moshcheni. You were being dragged, as it were, after God through the desert. Acharecha narutza, and we ran after you. He says, what is that referring to? Ba'et shalchu b'yarden, when we crossed the river Jordan. Another story that we learned not so long ago. K'moshe ne'emar, v'yimaher ha'am v'yavor, the people passed over the Jordan. Heviani ha'melech hadara, what is being brought into the room of the king? Hu mo'ed b'yatan l'Eretz Yisrael. It's referring to coming into Eretz Yisrael. Vinyan Chadarav, Chadrei Torah, he says Chadarav can refer to the deeper levels of Torah which we experience when we came into Eretz Yisrael. Ki Ika Torah hu be'Eretz Yisrael. And this is one of the themes that Vilna Gaon says over again and again. The main study of Torah, Avira de'Eretz Yisrael Machkin, the famous phrase, that the atmosphere in Israel makes you smarter. Okay, particularly, obviously, it's referring to Torah study. I want to go down to the next paragraph so you get some idea of the fact now that these psukim are historical in their reference. The Vilna Gaon sees this as Shlomo HaMelech referring to all the things that God has done for us and all the things that in the future God will do for us. Now listen to this, and this is mind-blowing. And if you managed to get here this evening just for this, it was worth it. Listen to this. Dova Acher. Moshcheni. What is Moshcheni? Nege kibbutz goliot. In the future, when we bring all the exiles together. Heviani neged beit hamikdash. Heviani is a reference to the temple. Kamoshe ne'emar bonei Yerushalayim, that will be rebuilt. Nagila v'nismecha bach neged giloy ha'shchina, referring to the divine revelation at that time. There is a futuristic element here that these psukim not only refer to events in the past, but also events, please God, in the future. Go down to the bottom of the page, and it's three lines from the bottom. Excuse me, just 1 second. No, four lines from the bottom. And he says that the first four psukim, which we now understand have an historical context, he says they refer to four different periods in Jewish history. Listen to this. It's a bombshell. He says, Harishon, Neged Yitziat Mitzrayim. Shir Hashirim Asher Lishlomo refers to Yitziat Mitzrayim. You can work it out. Why? Because what did they do when they left Egypt? Sharu. They sang. Shir Hashirim. That's verse number one. Sheboto Laila Sharu Shira. They sang a song. Kamosha Ne'amar. Hashir Yelechem Kalil Hitkadesh Acham. In other words, the interesting suggestion, not only at the Yam, but even when they left, there was a singing. Right? We don't normally talk about that, but he's got a reference to that. Pasuk Sheini, the second pasuk that we read, which talks about Yishokeni Minashikot Pihu, which we said refers to Torah, says the Vilna Gaon, what does that refer to? Nege Matan Torah. That's a reference to the giving of the Torah. Pasuk Shlishi, it gets even better. Hu Neged Binyana Mishkan, because the third pasuk, where we spoke about the what does it say over here? Let's just see the pasuk again. It talks about the Shmanecha, the Rea. What was going on in the Beit HaMikdash? The Ketoret, the smell of the beautiful incense. So he says that's a reference to the experience of the Beit HaMikdash. That's pasuk number 3. Neged Binyana Mishkan. Shekrivu Shivim Parim. And he says that Alamot is always a reference to the nations of the world. And therefore, in the temple, they would offer up 70 sacrifices. When was that? On Sukkot. And that would correspond to what the Pasuk is saying. Sorry? The Shivas and the seven nations, the 70 nations. And then Pasuk Revi'i, which is the Moshcheni, which we just read, Neged Biyata Arech Az Nishlam Akol, that's coming into Eretz Yisrael, that we are coming into the Cheder, to the Chadar, the room of God. Wow. Now here comes the bombshell. If you thought that was amazing, have a look at this. The Gam Heim, the last line of that page, Neged Abar Regalim, if we're ready, we're comparing these psukim to four stages in Jewish history, I'm going to tell you something else, that they actually refer to four different regalim, four different holidays in the Jewish calendar. This is a wow. Ha'echad, number one, if you just turn over, Neged Pesach, Sha'amru Shira. When we spoke about Shira, it was on Pesach, right? Either beginning or the end, whichever Shira you're referring to, whichever is when one normally associates with the end of Pesach. They would, and that was also Hallel Shira.
No, that's what he's referring to.
That's the beginning of Pesach. Beautiful. That's number one. Vahabet. And number two, Neged Shavuot, Matan Torah. So that's the Chag of Shavuos. Shehu Matan Torah. Hagimel. So what's the third when it talks about these tremendous events surrounding the what was going on in the temple? Vahagimel Neged Sukkot. That's a reference to Sukkot. Shu Zecha Lehekaf Anane Akovot. Because what happened on Sukkot was that the clouds of glory surrounded the Jewish people, which was dependent on building the Mishkan. They built the Mishkan and then the clouds came down. Says the Vilna Gaon, if already I'm getting so esoteric about this, I'm going to give you an answer to a kasha from a tour in Shulchan Aruch. Unbelievable. I told you he's out of the box, this guy. Look what he says next. Ubaze Yuturat Masha Hikshu, this is the Tur Arachaim, famous Kasha of the Tur. I'll give you an answer. Lama Anachno Sim Sukkot B'Tishrei. Why do we do Sukkot in Tishrei? Famous question. Should have been in Nissan. Because if Sukkot is about being protected by the clouds of glory, we left in Nissan. Why do we have Sukkot in Tishrei? So you know what they say, because of the climate, and it's a bit more of a Mesirat Nefesh. You know, you have all these answers. Says the Vilna Gaon, nothing of the sort. Listen to this. It's unbelievable. And how this guy's mind was working, I can't explain. He says, third line, En kivanshu neged hekav ananikos. We now said that Sukkot represents this being surrounded by the clouds. Hayah ro'oi laso b'nisan. And he said that should have been celebrated in Nisan. Why do we do the Sukkot in Tishrei? Ki b'nisan hayah tchilat hekav ananim. You're right. In Nisan, that's when the clouds began to surround the people. Aval nireh, but we know the fiyik kasha'asu et ha'egel. They did the egel, shivasu batamas, right? They worshipped the egel. Nistal kananim, the clouds went away. Va'az lo chazru. When did they come back? These clouds. Ad she'etchilu lasot ha'mishkan. They started building the mishkan, which was much later in the year and in Tishrei. Umisham yorad biyom ha'kippurim. We know that Moshe came down after Yom Kippur, which is when the Jews were forgiven. And when did the collection for the Mishkan begin? Macharat Yom HaKippurim, the day after Yom Kippur. Vayakel Moshe, what was the Vayakel? What happened? Vetziva lech melechet ha-Mishkan, duzui biyudalav b'tishrei, the 11th of Tishrei, the mitzvah was announced that we're going to build a Mishkan. And this, how do we know? Ketiv, because it says, he says, what happened was, the people started bringing the donations, and you know, there was so much, they told them to stop bringing, right? And it was, baboke, baboke, twice boke, two more days. So you've gone from the 11th was the announcement, boke, boke, 12, 13, the 13th of Tishrei, Shnei Yamim, are Yud Gibel B'Tishrei, Ubi Yudala B'Tishrei, not the Kochacham Lev, Moshe Tazav, then they had to take the gold and begin the process. B'minyan of Mishkan, they weighed all the gold. That was on the 14th. Uba Tedvav, and on the 15th of Tishrei, what happened? Itchilu lasot, they started making the Mishkan. Va'az, when they started making the Mishkan, what happened? As we've now explained, that the Mishkan and the clouds were linked. Chazra ananei kovot. Unbelievable. That's when the clouds came back. So why do we do Sukkot in Tishrei? Because that's when the clouds came back. It's unbelievable. Ulachain, ulakach, ano osim sukkah betetvav betishrei. We do sukkahs on the 15th of Tishrei. That's his thing. So in the middle of all of this, when referring to the four psukim and the historical context, he said, by the way, I'll give you an answer to a question which is famous. Why do we have sukkahs in Tishrei? The answer was because it reflects the return of the clouds after the Chet HaEgel, which came back because they began the process of building the Mishkan, which obviously was completed much later. It took them a few months to do it. And that process brought the clouds back, and that's when the festival of Sukkot was, as it were, established or re-established in terms of celebration. Unbelievable. So out of nowhere, he throws at you. Sorry? He's got at the bottom here. I haven't got to number four. Go to the end of that paragraph, three lines from the end, where he says, just one second. It's three lines from the end. V'hadalud, moshcheni achrecha. So what's the final reference? Which chag? Who neged shmini atzeret? Why is it shmini atzeret? That God is, as it were, dragging us after him. Shehul Yisrael levado is a sign that is our special, unique relationship with God. That's why it's in the singular. Moshcheni. This is not now the Umot Olam, nothing to do with the nations of the world, the 70 sacrifices and everything else. It's between us and God. The final departure, the au revoir that we say at the end. V'heim neged dalet chushim, and then he says also there are four senses that a person experiences, and he also brings all that. This is the Vonagon. I tell you, if you learn this more than about 10 or 15 minutes, you're probably going to have a brain breakdown, because there's no question about it. You know, I was going to say nervous breakdown, but I don't think that's the way. It is so elevating, and it is so extraordinary, this commentary. And it goes on like this all the way through. But I wanted to show you that what we're seeing over here, which is amazing, is the context, what we've learned this evening, which I think is really important, is to see, number one, that the Vonnegut always preserves the story. He tells you the storyline all the way through. He then hits you with endless number of comparisons, which he sees in terms of what these psukim represent. He then throws in a halachic kind of left field comment about a question that you may have had, which of course we've now answered in terms of the way we understand from Shir HaShirim. And then he'll go back to the story again, Shechor Ani V'Nava, and then he goes back to what's happening over here with the discussion and what Shechor means, etc., etc. I mean, it's impossible. If we learned Shir HaShirim like this, it would take us a year. It would take us more than a year. Right? This is a university course for probably take a whole year to study. So we can't do that. Sorry? There's nothing wrong with that, but it's just overwhelming. I mean, you know, to have this sort of type of discussion every week would be wonderfully uplifting, but it would blow your mind. It would be too much. Whether you could afford the Tylenol by the end of the season, I'm not quite sure. It'd be too much. So what I'm suggesting is, obviously, this is giving you a little bit of an idea what the Vonnegut does with this. What we saw this evening, which I think was so important, is really a kind of confirmation of what we've been saying all the way along, that the Mashal is so important. Of course, the Nimsha, what it's representing. But without understanding the sort of essence of what is being spoken about here, the ins and outs of the story, the way that the interactions, and what we saw at the beginning, the way Professor Cohen, Gabby Cohen, and what we've explained already from the beginning, the way that I've always seen it, and I'm just pleased I can sort of confirm it with what we saw this evening, the way that all of this physicality is so important. It's the only way to understand Shlomo HaMelech. And it's the only way really to understand Shir HaShirim, that you're taken into a level of closeness, which we understand from the physical end of this, and as the Rambam explains in Hilchot Tshuva, that the way we understand Avat Hashem, how can you love God? We explained this last week. God is not tangible. So how can you love something which is intangible? Through love of something which is tangible. And he talks about someone who's lovesick, and that you can't think about the whole time. The only thing you can think about is the person you love. And he says that should be our relationship to God. That was David HaMelech. David HaMelech was thinking about God wherever he went the whole time. And it's one of those things which, you know, one hears, one understands. What is so incredible, and this is really the thought for the day, is that the minhag is to say this every Friday. Wow. And again, ideally, one understands this. I mean, what one can dream about, put on your list of what ifs. What if we were in Tzfat in the 15th century with the Chevra, Shlomo Alkabetz and the Beis Yosef and the whole crowd, Joseph Cairo, saying Shir HaShirim, how the whole place didn't sort of you know, the whole shul did not lift and take off and go to heaven. I really don't know. And you wonder about that. Really? No, it's really, because they understood what was going on here. And if they sat around, then they would say, of course it says they went out to greet the Shabbos, that, like the Gemara says, the Gemara talks about that, put on white, special white clothes, and they would go out to greet the Shabbos, because this was greeting the beloved. And by saying Shir Hashirim, this reinforces not only the spiritual connection, but the physical connection as well. It's just too beautiful for words. I just don't know. I feel as if, like, I'm standing in front of the most beautiful painting in the world, the most beautiful poem in the world. Everything about it is just wow.
Shabbos referred to?
Not directly. I guess in Shir Hashirim there are references to that practice, but when you think about how precious that is and how it's done, I explained in week one that I once had that experience, but the way the Sephardim do it is they you go around the room, and if you get called on, you're supposed to read with the intonation. So you've got to be prepared for that, or at least sort of duck.
You would assume that Shabbos is the gift that God gave to the Jews.
Yes, yeah.
So the gift that the beloved gives, that the lover gives to the beloved, it should appear somewhere.
It has to appear. And I haven't gone into Shir Hashirim that much to give you the page and reference, but I'm sure it's there. It has to be. There's references to Chagim here. It can be for whatever you want it to be. I mean, this is the way it goes here. And, just follow the Vilna Gaon. And you'll see that he brings it here, on this pasuk of Moshcheni, he's bringing you four different approaches, if I'm not mistaken, on how to understand it. Different elements in history that it refers to, or different elements in the physical makeup of the human being that it refers to, or the Chagim of the year that it refers to. I mean, it's a wow. Yeah.
Because after all, Yayin makes you happy.
Right.
You should do the avoda of the simcha. So I think the answer he gave was that the problem is with drinking, it's an artificial happiness, it's an artificial high.
Yeah.
Because when you do the avoda, the kohen should
have a real high. Yeah.
And same thing with Torah.
Yeah.
You see the fact that when you drink, that's why it says, that's why I think it says, ki tovim dadachem ayayin, because the real Torah is better than wine.
Better than wine.
It's an artificial high.
Yeah.
And Torah
is a real high. Yeah, and we said the Divna Magid a few weeks ago, who says that famous thing about the blind, you know, the guy who was deaf and the guy who was lame, and they made a shidduch. One was carried on the shoulders of the other one, and they walk past the Carnegie Hall and they hear a fantastic concert, but the guy who's deaf can't hear it, but the guy on top can hear it, so he gives the guy a little schnapps, you know, to start dancing, because he hears the music. And that's what we do on Yom Tov, right? We make the body happy, but we're really listening for the spiritual message. And the Divna Magid, of course, was the... I've called him the Rebbe of the Vilna Gaon, you realize that? Because the Vilna Gaon used to go to the Divna Magid to get Musa, whatever that means. And that I leave you to really ponder on that. It defies imagination. We could say a lot more, and Bezrat Hashem, hopefully one day we will say a lot more. I want to, for 1 week, and it's probably not enough, next week Bezrat Hashem, we'll talk a bit about Koheles, because that reflects the end of Shlomo's life, and particularly what I want to focus on. I had Shiurim on Koheles in college, so I remember one of the things we spent quite a bit of time was on the contradictions. There's a lot of Gemara about it. There's Koheles already reflects a very different mindset. All right, he's gone out of all of the sort of elevation of Shir Hashirim, and it's very feet on the ground, looking at the world, and to a certain extent being conflicted by the world. Right, he praises Simcha, and then he says Simcha Maza Osa. What is the point of Simcha? You know, and he's looking at things, but one would use the word cynically to a certain extent. And we'll deal with that, Mitzvah Hashem, next week. Please God, next week is the last of the Shiurim that we're going to have for this season. And after Chagim, Bezrat Hashem, we'll start Sefer Ezra. We're going to go back and finish that, Ezra and Nehemiah, which is good. And again, I haven't learned Mishlei in detail, bits of Mishlei, one's done bits of it, which again may be something we can offer. Also, I would suggest that if you want to, I was listening today, although I don't have the time to hear it, we've got Shiurim on tape on Wayutar on Ruth, which are really worth revisiting, because we're coming up to Shavuos, and I think it's important to look at that again. There's so much to say. Sefer Ruth, which is so much to say, but we're sort of making efforts to get through some of the harder elements. And Metz Hashem, Ezra Nehemiah will keep us busy for the winter. And Malacha Aruba, but you got to start somewhere. Yeah, we are trying to get through it. But next week, Mr. Shem, we'll talk a little bit about Koheles and hopefully finish that particular element. And then after that, we'll see where we go. But in the meantime, everybody, this has, I hope, been as inspiring as it was for preparation. It was unbelievable. It's fabulous. To be continued. Thank you, everybody.